to Time Out for Sports with Joe Smith.
A weekly wrap of local, state, and national sports happenings all summer long.
On News Talk 96.1
and AM 1370 WGCL.
Now, here's your host, Indiana Sportscasters Hall of Famer, Joe Smith.
And welcome on board, everybody. Week number 9, TOS in the studio, high atop One City Center in downtown B-Town. And going to talk a little softball with the guy that runs the entire state, ASA, the Amateur Softball Association. You also know him as our outstanding Parks Chief, Parks and Rec Director Mick Renneisen, joining us, a former color man here as far as radio goes. And I still, Mick, before we, while we are being sentimental here right off the bat, still remember the miracle in paradise and our trip down to Newburgh in 1983.
Absolutely. That's how we first got introduced, I think, to Joe Huff before he came here to play football at IU. And one of the more memorable experiences of my short broadcasting career happened with you.
Well, I tell you what, a lot has happened in your life, and obviously you've grabbed hold of the reins under Mayor Mark Rezaian over the years and decades now, Mick. But wanted to bring you on, and we got lots to talk about, and we'll do that here over the next half hour. But another national tournament by the boards, which meant another banner coffer type setting as far as monies into the Bloomington and Monroe County community. And I tell you, since you and your crew go out on these national sites, Mick, and bid since 1993, I'm counting now, and I may be wrong, 27 nationals in 22 years, and we're not done yet.
That's right, and that's a phenomenal number.
Unbelievable.
I recall when Valerie Pena and I, then the CVB director, Convention and Visitors Bureau director, went out in 1989 to the Denver version of the ASA council meeting that's held annually each year where these tournaments are awarded. We hadn't thought about building Twin Lakes yet. We were starting to look for sites, but we knew that we were going to build something and we wanted it to attract events. So we went out to this council meeting and discovered the process and how many people voted on it. It's about 280 at the time vote on these events where they're placed, and learned the ropes, and I became more involved in the national scene. And next year we went back, learned a little bit more, built some relationships, and the following year, 91, we bid on our first event, which turned out to be the Women's Class C Slow Pitch National. Now, women's and adult softball is not what it once was, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but at the time we had 72 teams come to Bloomington and play in that first national event. And ever since then, except one year, 2005, we've had at least one ASA national tournament, and that streak is almost unheard of around the country.
A city and county our size, and
New parks being built all over the country, people spending tens of millions of dollars on their facilities, and still we're able to compete nationally, and that's a tribute to the great work of the people here, the CVB, the Visit Bloomington staff, our staff, and the friendliness of our community when people arrive here. They're just really surprised, and pleasantly so, by Hoosier hospitality. It's not just a slogan.
And, you know, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours, and they spend money, they leave money, and over the years and all of these nationals, what'd you tell me, $24-plus million dollars now. That's since 93 now.
That's correct, and it's, you know, some of the events generate more than others. Last year we had the 12 and under girls national, the USA-ASA national, and that one had 73 teams. That was over a $2 million economic impact. This year's will be somewhere in the $500,000 range, but you know that's all significant when you add it up over time, and it adds up to $24 million. And it's at a time of year, as we know, being Bloomingtonians, where the community is missing about 40,000 people. So restaurants, hotels, and other retail establishments really benefit from these summertime activities.
Well, we had a tournament that just went by the boards, and a very successful one, and we had the Bloomington Mojos finish second, and they had a chance to play for a national title right in their home city. But how received was the girls' fast pitch 16 and under that just concluded on Sunday?
We got great ratings again, really good comments from people about the facilities. Of course, we play at Winslow and Twin Lakes. Mm-hmm. When we use fast pitch nationals, we need 8 diamonds to play the 4-game guarantee requirement. And people really love the facilities. And over the years, we've done some improvements thanks to the city council and to Mayor Mark Rezaian. And his support, we've been able to do some refurbishments to what now are 37 and 23-year-old facilities. Winslow's 37 years old, and Twin Lakes is 23 years old. So we've added some new netting and some shade structures and bleachers and scoreboards, just kind of giving it a fresh look and feel. And then just the quality of the maintenance crew. I think we always hear a lot about how hard the staff works to make sure that the games are ready and the diamonds are lined and everything's picked up. They always comment about, there's no trash here. How come there's no trash around here? And I said, well, that's Mick's
clean,
pet
green
peeve.
City.
Well, Mick hates two things I hate. Joe, you'll remember this from my playing day.
Yeah.
Grass on the fence, weeds on the fence row, and trash on the diamonds.
No question about that. And, boy, it was a nice program that you brought in. And visit Bloomington, Indiana. Visit Bloomington, Indiana, City Parks and Rec. And, you know, you guys have really collaborated down through the decades now to bring us high-quality national events, which in turn leaves a lot of money in the coffers. This was an interesting scenario, as it turned out, the Indiana Mojo 16 and under. Now, I have, after we've gotten on the air, have noticed a couple of Edgewood names. We have Haley Taylor and also Kayla Seltzer. They're Edgewood girls, but Natalie Crane, Bailey Hamilton, Lindsay Keene, Kenley Johnson, Kylie Moody, Lindsay Owens, Katie Suits, Lo Schmidt, and Casey Kramer were the ones that were in the photograph. And again, a nice effort by a local team.
They finished second out of 34 teams. They had to come out of the loser's bracket. They pushed the champions, the Louisville team that won it all. They were down, I believe it was 5-1. It was at the championship game, and they were down 5-1. And then they got it down, I think, to 5-4. And then Louisville scored two in the top of the seventh. And Mojo came back and got it to 7-6 and had runners on base with two outs and just couldn't get that the tying and winning run across the plate to push the if game. But they played and battled all the way through. And congratulations to them. And
yeah.
And to the Louisville squad that was very competitive and obviously went undefeated in the tournament.
Commissioner of the Indiana ASA, the Amateur Softball Association, and City Parks Chief Mick Renneisen joining us on Time Out for Sports about 14 past the hour. A little bit later, Cutter's going into the playoffs. They're in another new football league, which they've conquered well. They've won 5 of 8. And we'll play, we have the matchup that we'll be announcing, the Evansville Enforcers, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, down in the Pocket City. Aaron Sauter will be joining us a little bit later. Mick, it has been, as you just alluded to, the high quality that of this tournament that we just had, but boy, it's been a busy, busy, busy summer hosting national events.
We actually will have a second one coming up on Labor Day weekend, and that's unusual to get to. It'll be our first adult nationals since 2002. We used to bid on predominantly adult nationals, and then over time learned that there was just as much work and effort in an adult national as there was a youth, but that the youth numbers were far more significant. Yeah. They bring in parents,
mom, dad, grandparents,
siblings, aunt and uncles, and you end up with a quite a greater economic impact, which is good for our community, and it's one of the reasons we target the youth age groups. However, we still have a strong adult program in Bloomington. We have a lot of teams that play in our state tournaments across ASA, across the state. And locally, we have a lot of teams that still play tournament softball. So we'll have the Men's D Northern Territory National here over Labor Day weekend. We expect probably 40 to 50 teams based on the numbers we've seen historically when it's been held. That's an 11-state territory all the way out to North Dakota and South Dakota. Oh, okay. And then we're the eastern edge of the territory, goes down to Kentucky and all the way over to North South Dakota.
So, and they all will converge on the city Labor Day weekend, and we'll have you on the air as we get a little bit closer to that. But you hosted a 16 and under state. You had a bunch of teams in June and had some national qualifiers, practically the entire month of June.
June is a busy month for softball tournaments. You know, the high schoolers get out later and later each year. That month of June is where all the qualifiers for nationals occur, and they need to get time to get to the nationals in July. So we were lucky enough to be hosting the girls 16 and under state. I would call that the best age group.
Okay.
Not only from a skill set, it's a recruitable age, and so therefore it's usually got the most number of teams. So we had 40 teams at that event. We also hosted a gold national qualifier for the 18 and under division, so those would be the elite of the elite athletes, the highest division in girls fast pitch, and we had 16 teams. That was also a June tournament. And then we had a state games qualifier, which qualified a team to the Nationals also back in June with 17 teams. So a lot of girls fast pitch in the month of June to get those girls qualified for their respective Nationals.
Is that where the Mojos qualified back in
they
June
did.
To qualify for the tournament they
That's
just
correct.
Finished second in? So mm-hmm. you say that, yeah. And can the college coaches come and see and watch that? Is this a recruitable period?
They could, and they were there for some of those state tournaments. I did not see as much of that at the National, so I don't know if that's a recruiting hands-off period or not.
Okay. Just was curious because, obviously basketball coaches on the collegiate beat nationwide are dipping down into the 7th and 8th grades to recruit talent to play for them. Well, July was not shorted. I mean, we just left July, and you had a tournament that actually started in July and ended in early August. But that being said, the men got involved in a little slow pitch.
We did. We had a couple of adult state slow pitch tournaments. The men's Class C with 6 teams, and the men's Class D South State with 20 teams back on July 18th. And those very D teams that finished high enough to qualify will be some of the teams participating in that Northern Territory National over Labor Day weekend. Of course, states are doing their tournaments around the country to qualify their teams to come hopefully to Bloomington on Labor Day, at least in those 11 states, although surrounding territories can send their teams to the nearest proximity site if they'd like to come.
Now, I know you were out in, I believe, Reno, Nevada last fall, and we have, again, 18 and under, the girls' fast pitch coming in 2016. What, the cities, and where do we rack up demographic-wise, population-wise, with other cities as you've seen now over the years? So what are you kind of expecting now, or what did you expect and what did you see in Reno when you won that bid?
Well, I tell you, it's very competitive. There's what I would call the five gems of the 105 national tournaments that are awarded every year. There's five that are coveted by all the best bidding cities because they produce the most economic impact. And those are the 18 and under girls, USA, ASA, which we have next year, the 16 and under girls, the 14, the 12s, and the 10s. And then there's a couple of gold nationals that also paired together are pretty good generators of economic impact. So, for example, this 18 and under division next year, this year in Spartanburg, South Carolina, they had 104 teams. So in the Midwest, we'll expect more than that.
Okay.
This year, the 16 and under girls in Chattanooga, Tennessee, 182 teams. Now, Bloomington's not big enough to host that event. In fact, the 18s will push our limit. We're going to use Lower Cascades, Twin Lakes, and Winslow. We'll have 10 fields. It's a four-game guarantee, and you start on Monday and end on Sunday. So these athletes will be in town for an entire week playing softball next year.
Wow.
So we're kind of maxed out now. We will not be able to bid on anything that exceeds 100 teams. So the 16 and under exceeds 100 teams by far. The 14 and under had 140. So that's another event we will not be able to bid on. We just don't have the number of fields to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The 12s is right at 100, and the 10s is under 100. So, we're kind of limited now on what we can bid on in the future. But these territory events like the one we just had, 30, right. 40, 50, sometimes 60 teams, great pieces of business, and we'll continue to look at those on years that we can't bid on some of the what I call the top five events in the country.
Well, it's been lucrative since 1993, 27 nationals in 22 years. We have another, as Mick was pointing out, an adult national coming in Labor Day weekend and just starting to scrape the surface. Yeah, we do well with what we have, but that being said, the City Council, Mayor Mark Cruzan and his crew approving some funding in late 2013 for upgrades to some parks at our current facilities, and we'll kind of scour that with Mick Renneisen, who's very much involved not only as commissioner of the Indiana ASA, but he is also city parks chief. We'll talk to Mick about that and some of the ins and outs of making a successful bid. When we come back, you're listening at 21 past the hour to Time Out for Sports on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Welcome back, everybody. Sun has popped out high atop One City Center in downtown B-Town. Our guest here this half hour, the Parks and Rec Chief, Meg Renheisen, also the state ASA commissioner, talking softball. Aaron Sauter has arrived, the head coach of the Indiana Cutters, and they are playoff bound down to Evansville this coming Saturday night. And we'll have, they had a big dinner and auction at Yogi's the other night to help the team out, and we'll get some conversation with Aaron here in a bit. Don't forget Reds baseball tonight. The division leading in the Central Division, the Cardinals. So, Reds after the fire sale, 7 o'clock tonight. Anthony DeScalfani will be on the hill against St. Louis. Marty Brenneman in the pregame at 7 o'clock tonight. Mick, you know, it has been a great collaboration, and you've been very much a part of that because you are, in fact, the head of the Parks and Rec Department. But Mayor Cruzan, the city council, and gave you the monies here a few years ago, and you embellished on some of the upgrades that we've had. But without those upgrades and amenities, there would be no national tournaments.
No, and you really have to go back to the vision that we had and the administrations before that have supported the vision all the way through into currently Mark Cruzan's administration, understanding the value of building quality facilities. They benefit the local players first and foremost because those kids, the athletes at the youth level and at the adult level get to play on them all the time, but then they also helped generate economic activity that wouldn't happen if you didn't build them to a higher standard. So that forward thinking has helped us maintain our presence nationally. And of course, we started by building the facilities to have state tournaments.
Sure.
You build your reputation, and then you go after nationals. You build your reputation, and you hopefully keep that reputation. And then you have to fend off all the new competitors, and I'll give you an example. The city of Westfield just built a $40 million complex.
That's nice.
For baseball and softball, 400 acres, 29 baseball fields, 16 or something softball fields. We're never going to do that here. But still, we have something that Westfield doesn't. They have a brand new asset, but they haven't done any ASA softball events yet. They haven't. Well, they have had some, but they have to build their reputation, their presence. Evansville just built an 8-diamond complex, great sports town. So it'll be interesting to see how they do over time. They clearly want to follow the Bloomington model and have the same kind of successes we have here.
I know my son runs the Great Lakes Valley Conference, the GLVC, and they held their conference tournament at that Westfield, both the men's and women's, when it was all said and done, and I'm talking softball. So, yeah, it is a great facility. But we have great facilities. You know, you were talking about some of the teams, and I know that, you know, you're going to be bidding here on some youth and adult nationals for even the year beyond 2017. What's the landscape look like that for, looking 2 years beyond?
Well, that's the way the national governing body.
You have to do it.
That's right. That's always a 2-year process out. So we'll go down to Louisville, Kentucky this year, starting October 31st through November 5th, where the ASA council meeting will be held. We'll make our pitch. We've already put in our bids for 2017, and we'll find out who we compete against in September when the complete package of bids is sent out to everybody, and then we'll have to begin our wooing process, our lobbying for the events, and that goes on all the way through until the voters actually press a button. You get a 3-minute presentation. We often do a video along with
3 minutes. Huh?
3 minutes, because there's maybe 20 cities bidding on some of these events, and there's 105 to award. So there's some time that takes a full day to award all the events.
Gotcha.
And we'll talk to other cities, and we'll try to find a way that we can put our best foot forward and continue our successful string of having national tournaments. But we're mindful that you don't go after the best events every year. You kind of strategically pick. It's great to have this 18 and under next year. I'm sure the hotels would like us to have it every year, but you're not going to get it every year. So we'll bid on something smaller and something that's not as attractive to everybody, so that we can continue to have our events and keep our name and our presence out there.
You know, I was going to ask you, once you're on site and getting ready to go, you know, into your, 3-minute spiel, so to speak, what goes into the game plan? What goes into making a strong bid? And continued success that Bloomington and Monroe County's had putting on these national tournaments, I mean, that's an added 2, 3, 4 assets in addition to you making the presentation.
Well, I think several things go into a successful bid. Your past history is number one. So you're actually rated by the teams, by the umpires, by an independent ASA representative that's sent to your city, and you're evaluated by the national office, how you turn in your paperwork and how efficient you are at managing through some of their steps to facilitate the final orders of finish and other reports that are due to them. That culminates in some number, kind of like what you'd get on your report card. So you get a rating. That rating is published. The voters see those ratings, and they see how you did. And those ratings mean a lot. So that's first and foremost, I think you maintain a good rating with the national office, and the council sees that and appreciates that. There's a financial component. There's a minimum you have to bid on the tournaments, but there's not a maximum. So you have to figure out where your margins are. How much do you bid in addition to the minimum to maybe make your bid stand out over somebody else? And I think there's some, well, quite frankly, name recognition. People know the people that come to the microphone from Bloomington. They know us. We've been around a long time. Hopefully they see us as a well-established, successful site that they can rely on to put on a great event.
You know, and we played, for you and I as teammates, for several decades here, the slow pitch game. And back when, I mean, you know, we had Upper Cascade and we had West 9th Street. And then we went to Lower North and Lower South. And that helped with the upgrades and just, you know, establishing those two facilities. And then, of course, Twin Lakes. But, you know, we have 10, don't we, total? How many do we, how many diamonds? Yeah, we got four out of
10 total, but only four of those can we use for adult level play because of the field dimension. So we took, actually, Joe, I don't know if you've been to Lower for a while, but the old short porch and left and right, and the two, that's been removed. They're now youth fields. So we brought the fences even in closer than they used to be in our adult softball days. So that facility is solely used for youth play now.
You know, talking about that, and I know that some of the 14 and 16-year-old brackets are up for bids every year. But that being said, those tournaments really include, you talk about bringing a lot of teams in. I mean, that's a ton of teams. And maybe that's why, I mean, we can't bid there because we don't have the facilities. But again, you said pick and choose your spots and win.
Right, the 182 team tournament that Chattanooga just had, there's a minimum 182? requirement. 182. There's a minimum requirement of one field for every 10 teams in the tournament. Well, that would require us to have 18 fields. We don't have those. So it'd be a bad experience for the teams, for management staff. We don't have enough hotel rooms. When we have a 100 team tournament, every hotel room in Bloomington is full, plus the surrounding areas fill up.
I want to get back to our situation, even with the 10 fields. Numbers again, Mick, this past summer for adult softball, I call them the Weekend Warriors. Right now, Fall League is in progress, and you have well over 100, and you had that many that played in the summer. So while the numbers, I don't care. You got three digits clear on through the calendar year of, April through end of October?
That's right.
That's not bad.
And when what 100 teams translates into is about 1,500 adults playing a sport in the summer. That's not an insignificant number of people that still participate in the game, mostly for recreation. A very small percent of those 100 teams in the summer leagues are playing competitive softball. They compete, of course, every time they go out and play. They want to win. They play hard. But the travel ball clubs that play, whether it's youth or adult, that's sort of a very small percentage of the entire number of teams, probably about 5 to 10%.
So next on our plate, as we mentioned, will be Labor Day weekend, the Men's D Slow Northern Territory Tournament. And as Mick was mentioning, the first adult event that the city has hosted in 13 years and close to 50 teams there. Last year, last fall, Mick got the 18 and under girls fast pitch in town, the National Class A there. So we're all set there. And the bidding process, as he mentioned, will be down in Louisville starting at the end of October. You know, Mick, switching gears from State ASA Commish to City Parks Chief, I noticed a piece in the paper, and I wanted to, since we have done so much with our parks facilities, our upgrades, making new parks. I live on the east side, as you know. You just cut ribbon out at Park Ridge here not long ago. But plans now for the switchyard, the old Wee Willies down on the south side, to be an entrance into everything that is there. We're talking 50-plus acres here. But, I mean, wow, this is really an asset here.
So I think this is going to be one of the most significant redevelopment projects that the city will have done for a long time. Wow. You think about the switchyard, what it was used for 150 years. A train facility, obviously, rehabbing the trains, working on the trains, storing trains when the industry was all downtown. And then it was abandoned. and left vacant. And it's coal ash and cinder and, you know, scrub trees and nothing exciting to look at. So the people that surround it, whether it's a business or a residential community, they have nothing but kind of an eyesore that they've looked at ever since the railroads abandoned. Even when it was used by the railroads, you know, not too many people want to live by something like that, or that's not highly desirable property. When you turn it into a park, you really transform what's going to happen around that site, what's going to redevelop. I think new businesses will pop up in places of businesses now that may exist in the future around the park, may do very well, but new ones will probably pop up. I think new residential product will pop up around the site. And I would suggest to you and your listeners that think about what Bryant Park was in 1957. That's when it was built, 58 years ago. And imagine what wasn't around it in 1957. And now imagine Bloomington without it. Bryant Park's 33 acres. The Switchyard Park is 58 acres.
58.
Nearly twice the size. Now, it's long and linear. Bryant's a square. But nonetheless, you're dealing with almost twice as much property, a mile and two-tenths long, that has frontage, or the backs of businesses, on Walnut Street on one side on the east and on Rogers Street on the other side. What will the community see there 25 years from now after the park's done? I doubt it's going to look much like it does today.
Well, and while, you know, we hated to see what happened to the management at Wee Willie's, which had been an icon restaurant on the south side, they went out of business due to the death of management. But two, has this that site been purchased by the city, or is that part of a something that's on the table for Mayor Mark to get done in the council before his tenure ends?
Well, we've been in negotiations through the Redevelopment Commission, who's the authority that is financially providing the funds for the redevelopment of the area, including the Switchyard Park. We've talked to the owners of Wee Willie's. They're great to work with. They see our vision. Mm. I'm hopeful that we'll come to a conclusion soon with them. And the purpose of the acquisition would be to widen the area of the entrance on the east side of the park. So this is the Walnut Street side. This is the highly visible, highly trafficked side. We have 30 foot of entrance access now that goes along with a spur that feeds to the Black Lumber Company. But we would like to expand that and widen it so that you can really get a view of the park from Walnut Street, and it'll give us more opportunity to bring in cars, bicyclists, pedestrians, and access roads than we would do if we just use the 30 feet that we have accessible to us now. I think it's going to change the businesses around it over time as they have frontage to the park and the park's entrance as well.
Well, as you say, just one of the biggest, if not the biggest, add to the landscape of Bloomington and Monroe County. We wish you well in that regard. Keep us posted. That'll be something I know Glass will in time want to talk to you about on the morning show. But hey, that was great. Always seeing you, my friend. Best to the family, and keep up the great work. And thanks for coming in and unraveling what I have often labeled the United States amateur capital of softball for a town our size. Thanks a lot, my friend.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it.
Mick Renneisen joining us, City Parks Chief and State ASA Commissioner. When we come back, we'll talk a little Cutters football. Back in action they go after a dinner and auction to help out the club. Playoff time in a brand new league, the Minor League Football Alliance. Aaron Sauter joins us in studio next. Right now, about 26 before the hour of 7 o'clock, Reds baseball coming up against the Cardinals at the Great American Ballpark at 7. You're listening to Time Out for Sports on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Welcome back, everyone. Time Out for Sports. Sunshine abounding on an early evening in Bloomington, and you're listening to Time Out for Sports. Our sponsors, as always, the Shortstop Food Mart, the Barbecue Train, and heading our Employee of the Week list this week is Brooke Piper. So congrats out to Brooke. Be sure to stop in and see all the guys and gals that help Amber Harmon and Chris Smith run the Shortstop Food Mart right there at the corner of East 10th and Smith Road. David Hayes, Comprehensive Financial Consultants, and also, as all of our sponsors have been with us for a number of years, Royal South Toyota's on South Walnut Street. Well, joining us in studio, Aaron Sauter. And Aaron, first of all, we appreciate it. I mean, it's not like you lived up the street or around the block or even out in Western Monroe County. You made the drive from Plainfield, but great time of year, huh?
I just appreciate the opportunity to talk about Cutter's football and talk about our playoff run coming up.
You know, I got to ask you, this time of year, you being a longtime former high school coach before you took the Cutter's spot last winter, how different of a feel is it to, be in the postseason of a season and is winding down with an opportunity to play for the title as opposed to getting one of your high school football teams just a few days into practice for the season ahead?
I think the only difference, you know, we've been working to get to this point since January. It's similar to high school football in which you worked the whole year, and then when you get the playoff time, you know, you're trying to play your best football. That's the same as high school football with the Cutters here. The difference is in high school football in Indiana, you're guaranteed a playoff spot. So no matter what happens, you know you have a chance to play in the postseason. But with the Cutters, we had to earn our playoff spot. So we had to go through and beat some good teams to get to a point where we can compete in the postseason. So I think it means a lot more to me as a coach because not everyone's playing right now.
Well, no question about it, and you certainly have hit the nail on the head because these guys have, and these guys aren't getting paid. This is for the love of the game, Aaron, and I think that has to be pointed out again.
Yes, sir, and the guys have been great. I mean, even though they're not getting paid, they work like professionals. Yeah. We work hard twice a week at practice, and they play every Saturday, and they're putting forth family time and work time and making football a priority.
Head coach of the Indiana Cutters playing in the Minor League Football Alliance. What's been your take of playing in this new loop? You're one of 12 teams entering the postseason, four divisions of teams spread out in, Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan. What's your thumbnail sketch of how things have kind of worked out league-wise?
I felt the league seasons went really well. The league took care of us and really gave us a favorable schedule. We didn't have to travel to Michigan. We didn't have to travel really very far, except Evansville is our longest trip. So the league has done a good job of making our schedule manageable. The teams have been high-quality teams. Everyone's had a lot of sportsmanship, which isn't always the case in semi-pro football. But the opponents, week to week, have been awesome to play against.
Yeah, and that's been the problem with some of the associations that the Cutters have been in other leagues has been, not that the Cutters have been guilty. They have been the peacemakers, so to speak, but that's one reason they hopped into this MLFA, and you're exactly correct. You know, you started with a toughie right off the bat in the Kentucky Extreme there, and they ran the table or have run the table. They haven't lost a game, including that 27-0 shutout the other night when they beat the team you're going to be playing this Saturday down at Harrison High School in Evansville, the Evansville Enforcers. But the Extreme, you're going to have to go through them to continue onward. But I know these guys, hey, it's the postseason. Anything can happen, huh?
And how I view the regular season, there's two goals we're trying to accomplish. First, we want to get better every week so when we get to the postseason, we can compete and have a chance to make a run for a championship. And in seconds, qualifying for the playoffs. And we took care of qualifying for the playoffs. I feel like we've gotten better every week. So now it's time to put it all together. And it's just about surviving and advancing, similar to the NCAA tournament. We're just focused on surviving each week. Advance to the next week, we got to win four and win a championship.
Well, you finished the regular season 5-3, and I want to talk about a four-game winning streak that really gave you, some steam after losing one game there early on against a very, very good football club. But what kind of keyed the, and again, we talked about the Kentucky Extreme, and you also ran into the Tri-County Braves in the middle of June, and that was a tough night, and you had one win, and then you reeled off four in a row to earn yourself into the playoffs. What kind of keyed the success there?
The biggest key is we came together as a team. We had a young team coming into the season. We had some veterans return just at the start of the season. So we really started gelling as a team after the Braves game. Defense played extremely well. Offense played extremely well because we're protecting the ball, managing the game. Everything came together, and we played really well as a team, which not saying that wasn't the case earlier, but I felt like we really got our chemistry together and just started to be able to predict what each other is going to do and start making plays off each other. And that only comes from experience playing with one another.
Well, and learning your system. And right from the get-go, as you said, you got the job early winter. I mean, the guys were working out on their own. I think you got the job in February or March. And you had to install your system. And it wasn't some high technique type thing. I mean, you're pretty much a meat and potato guys. but what they adhered to and what they really grabbed hold of was how simple things were offensively and defensively as you laid out your game plan.
Yeah, the biggest thing about what I do on offense, defense, special teams is just take advantage of the talent we have.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to have something universal enough that we can fit whoever our playmakers are each year into a position where they can make plays and help the team. We run a West Coast offense, that has a lot of flexibility. We have the ability to be a power running team. We can be a short passing team. We can be a vertical passing team. So whatever our strengths are, even week to week, we can really take advantage of that. On defense, we played a 3-3 stack most of the season, and a little bit of 4-2-5, and that allows us to use a lot of our speed. We have a lot of young skills guys, and it gives us a chance to blitz from different directions and really keep things off balance.
Gary Labarge, is Gary helping you out on defense?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he's your coordinator, isn't he?
Yes, sir. He's done a great job.
Yeah, and I don't know if you brought any stats in with you, but that being said, you've been able to score off your defense, and I know that was one of your goals, not only to take the ball away, give away, takes away, or key at any level, but you have been scoring touchdowns. How many you got? A 5, 6, 7?
I believe 5.
Yeah. I know Bob McGarrah had one big one in that win when you clinched the playoffs when you beat the Allen County Lions. He ran one back, but you've had a lot of impact players going into the postseason. And Aaron Sauter, the head coach of the Cutters, joining us. Talk a little about some of those impact players defensively, first of all, Aaron.
Okay, well, we've had several defensive players that made an impact. Bob McGarrah is a returning veteran. Played extremely well for us this season. Nick Land has been a great leader on and off the field for us. Justin Ferguson plays inside linebacker, has came in and played some really important spots for us. Dre Key from Indianapolis has came down, and when we needed him to play extremely well, he did so. Michael Cupp is a veteran player from the Cutters that has really contributed. Some young guys, Lucas Kling, who's a first-year semi-pro player, has been extremely good for us at linebacker and defensive end. DJ Sanders and John Story have been probably the best defensive backs in the league, and probably some of the best defensive backs I've worked with in the last several years.
You have inherited a young man that really we'll label him a rookie because this is technically right out of high school, his rookie year, your quarterback, or at least one of them, Philip Hubsman. And you told me, I think, when I talked to you, was that a young man that played his football down in Jasper?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, he's developed. Robbie Colon has been a veteran. Pass cutter teams that have gone on to championships. You're getting a lot from your trigger men in Hubsman and Colon.
Yes, sir. And really our focus on offense is play great team offense. So we have a lot of contributors. And Phil and Robbie have done a great job of managing the talent they have on the field. And that's huge, especially in a West Coast offense.
Yeah.
The quarterback's job is, you know, take the plays that are available. Use the talent that's you know, open based on what the defense has given you, and then make plays when you need to with your legs. And both of those guys have done a great job managing games and making plays when they need to.
Yeah, they have been coming up with some big plays, and Hupsman's been right there, and the defense has given you, and you are the offensive coordinator, Aaron, a great field position, getting some things done. But, you know, you're just not throwing the ball over the yard. You've had some running backs really come to the forefront and really are in a good groove going into the postseason Saturday night. Talk about the running game.
Yes, sir. We have Antonio Fair, Blake Bertolino, and Jamar Johnson. Antonio Fair is from Indianapolis. Blake's from Bloomington here.
Yeah.
And Jamar's from Terre Haute. And those guys have bought in to being a unit. We rotate. A lot of our offense have been single back. We've rotated them throughout the entire game, and more defense is down because they each have a different running style. They each run hard. They're each a big play threat. But Antonio Fair is a pounder, so he's going to stick it in there and make tackles. Blake Bertolino's a cutter. He'll make plays in space, and he's extremely fast in space. And then Jamar Johnson is just a pure speed player. And with those guys rotating, it's hard for defenses to get a beat on what we're doing. And really trying to shut down the run offense, it's difficult for him to do that with those guys rotating.
You know, you finished up regular season, as we mentioned, 5-3, having won four of your last five, Aaron, and you had the week off while the Kentucky Extreme played the Evansville Enforcers last weekend. So you really couldn't prepare last week, but talk about what you did, and now lay out the week ahead as you get ready for that rematch with the Enforcers down in Evansville Saturday night.
Well, the biggest focus last week is we wanted to work on some fundamentals, which we did on the Monday practice. But then I wanted to give guys the rest of the week to rest and make sure we're healthy, because we're planning to make a four-week run.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure guys were healthy and ready to go for 4 weeks and fresh. So we gave them Thursday off and gave them the weekend off. And we had a practice yesterday and it looked great. We have another practice on Thursday just to basically finish off the game plan. But overall, we're coming into this game fresh. We're coming to the game healthy. And we have a chance to really make some good things happen.
I know Andrew Barrett has been a young man that has taken care of some of the off-the-field stuff for you as far as running the Indiana Cutters, a nonprofit organization. But you had an interesting scenario. Last weekend, you were over at Yogi's for a little fundraising dinner and silent auction. How'd that come out?
That went extremely well. The food was great, and we made a lot of money off the silent auctions.
There you go. You can't beat that, huh? Aaron Sauter joining us. Hey, tell me a little about this Reeser kid that has been doing some place kicking for you. My golly, I mean, he's adding some three-pointers, and I can't remember what particular game it was, but as far as covering the Cutters all these years, no one has ever kicked a 50-yard field goal, and he popped one through from 50, an all-time record.
Yes, sir. We've been really lucky to have Dustin Reeser become part of our team. He's extremely talented kicker, hit the 50-yarder in a game, and has been great for kickoffs and really just for ball management through special teams. Has been extremely important for us. PATs have been spot on. The ability to kick field goals is huge in semi-pro football, because not every team has that capability of doing that well. And he brings another weapon to our offense.
Well, last weekend, with this thing going on at Yogi's, you didn't make that trip down to Evansville, did you, to see that game between the Extreme and Enforcers?
No, sir. We're lucky enough.
You had tape on both.
We play both teams. We have film, and to me, they're really similar in how they try to attack us too. So. I think either way, we knew what we had to do coming in.
Well, it's the Extreme, and they got tattooed by the, I'm sorry, it's the Enforcers who lost to the Extreme. It was 27-0 back on Saturday night. So for the second time since July the 25th, a rematch, again, the same venue where they played at Harrison High School, which is a turf field. It was 27-7, and really, that had to be a long bus trip back home, because you really hurt yourself with a lot of mistakes. It wasn't like you went out and they overpowered you and you had no want for the game. I mean, boy, you gave a lot of points away, didn't you, that night, Aaron?
We gave some points, but we also had a lot of penalties on offense and just some things that are not characteristic of us. I think we play extremely hard, but we didn't play our best football. And I think that's true for every loss we had in the regular season. We didn't play our best game. And I believe that if we can come out week to week and play our best football, no one's going to beat us, including the Evansville Enforcers. But we have to control what we control. We have to make sure we protect the ball, we don't get dumb penalties, and we are consistent in what we do. And if we do that, we're going to be able to compete against any team.
What keys the defense against what they're going to throw at you? You mentioned some of the penalties. That hurts, obviously, offensively and defensively to a certain extent. Did they have better field position all night long? What are you going to have to do defensively to shore up things here Saturday night?
Evansville loves to run the ball. Okay. They have a couple of huge backs also that are fast. So we have to stop the run. To me, to win this game, we have to stop the run. We have to be able to run the ball. And the team that can do that is going to win the game.
You know, you talk about this rematch, and in a relatively short period of time, I imagine since you've had the guys and now they know, and you said you had practice earlier this week, you'll have another one Thursday night. There'll be no sticking any – you don't have to stick a pin in them to get them jacked up. They probably welcome this rematch, don't they, your kids?
I hope they're excited. I'm excited.
I'm excited.
And I think the guys we have, regardless of opponent, we're just excited to be in the playoffs and have a chance to continue our season.
Well, and we're excited for you, Aaron. And again, I appreciate you stopping in. And let's do this again next week, and we'll talk about how you defeated the enforcers and move to the next round. It's a what a 4-week setup, isn't it? And it's win or go home. We don't talk. I mean, it's a win in advance. That's what we're talking about Saturday night. And hey, let's do it again next week. How about it?
Sounds great to me, Joe.
All righty. GPS worked fine. He came all the way from Plainfield to join us tonight on Time Out for Sports, the head coach of the Indiana Cutters, taking on again for the second time in 2 weeks. First round of the Minor League Football Alliance playoff on Saturday night. The Evansville Enforcers, the opponent for our Indiana Cutters. We'll be back to close things out on Time Out for Sports. You're listening to that show, this show, on this particular Tuesday night on News Talk 96. And AM 1370 WGCL. Well, welcome back one final time. And again, we thank Aaron Sauter. Best of luck to those Cutters against the Evansville Enforcers, 7 o'clock Saturday night, Harrison High School down in the pocket city of Eville. And our thanks to City Parks Chief and State ASA Commish, Mick Renheisen, our Employee of the Week out at Barbecue Train, the shortstop. Is Brooke Piper. Our producers tonight has been Jim Ritter, as always. Hey, by the way, red and black game for Edgewood at 9 Saturday, maroon and gold at 5:30 at Martin Memorial, purple and white at Huff Memorial, 7 o'clock. That will take care of week number one in the high school ranks. Gosh, our first game coming up on the 21st. Hey, for everybody concerned, all of our sponsors, for Jim Ritter, Reds baseball coming up at the top of the hour. We'll see you next week on Time Out for Sports. So long, everybody.